In Vancouver, I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. Rafe Mayer joins me again. He's one of my favorite guests and favorite broadcasters. His website is at rafeonline.com, and he's recently ramped up coverage there, blogging several times a week. He was heard earlier today and every Monday morning on CBC Radio's morning show, The Early Edition. You can read his weekly column on the Taiyi's website, and he's also a regular over at the Common Sense Canadian, which you can find at thecanadian.org. He is also a former BC cabinet minister. Please welcome back to the Plant on the Line program, Rafe Mayer. Good morning, Mr. Mayer.
Joe, nice to talk with you as always.
The same. How have you been?
Very well. As a matter of fact, my bride and I just got back from a short sojourn in London, which always kind of cleans my head. And for some reason, it's sort of like my Maui is, you know, Maui is to other people. So I'm feeling fit as a fiddle.
Yeah, you know, I read on your website the travelogue that you did on it. And the thing that caught me, you went to a Proms concert?
Yeah.
I'm 28 years old. I'm not supposed to like that kind of music. But it just seems like a fun thing to do.
It is a lot of fun. It really is. And if you get to go to the final, in which case you'll probably have to pay $1 million or have the tickets left to you, it is even more fun because the audience gets more involved. But the audience does get involved here when they start singing things like Rule Britannia and so on. And it's all good, upbeat music, and they always have a band leader who is a conductor who is a lot of fun. You couldn't have some stodgy guy there, and this was no exception. I frankly can't remember his name. It was just an afternoon of a lot of fun.
And then when they do Land of Hope and Glory, what's that like?
Well, you know, we didn't see that this time. We have seen it in the past. And I'll tell you, it makes an imperialist out of everybody, if only just for the moment. You know, I would never want to go back to those kind of days. But when they do Rule Britannia, followed by the Land of Hope and Glory, you're prepared to go to war if anybody points an enemy out to you. It's that kind of a show.
To BC politics, and I guess the HST referendum. Why do you think they decided to go with a referendum rather than an up-and-down vote in the legislature?
Well, they're hoping against hope that they'll be able to get people to forget. In a year, people will have other priorities, and they're not going to be so concerned, and the government will have a chance to get everybody to understand what a wonderful tax this is. I think really what it amounted to, Joe, it's the best of a lot of very, very bad options that they left themselves. Now, I want to just mention this about the HST, because it and BC Rail are the ones that are going to cause the government the most trouble in the next election. And why is that? Because they violate a very important political principle that I call Axiom 3. Never create an ongoing issue that's still going to be with you at election time. And if you do that, you're going to pay. You've got to at least get people calmed down. Now, you know, a good example of this, Joe, is a sales tax. You know, when I was in government, we'd raise the sales tax. We always raised the damn thing in the first year or two. Certainly didn't raise it any later. And the same with W.A.C. Bennett, and I suspect with other governments. These guys have got these two issues that are coming back to haunt them. B.C. Rail, they have yet to pay a political forfeit for that. Well, they're going to. The Bassey-Virk trial is going to make sure of that. Doesn't matter which way the trial goes. All of the dirty linen is going to come out, and I suspect you're going to see some cabinet ministers of the day involved in that as well. The HST is that Joe Moore, and this hasn't been mentioned very much, this exposes the total lack of truth in this government. Colin Hanson, there's no other way of putting it, he was caught lying, and so was the premier. The briefing papers that Hanson had were clearly at his request. And to say that he hadn't read them is absolute nonsense. If that were true, he should resign on that ground. Now, what people know and understand, I think, is that HST just doesn't come up in an afternoon when you're doodling on the back of an envelope. This sort of takes a lot of time to prepare. And the example I often use, Joe, is think of your own club or whatever organization you have, and you've got an idea that you want to change the Constitution and do things differently. You can't just raise that at a general meeting. You've got to do some background. You've got to start talking to people, finding out the facts, figure so on. That's just you and me in our ordinary way of life. So the HST, quite clearly, had a lot of very high-level discussions going on long, long before the May 9 election.
So why do you think this has happened? Why do you think these issues have as you say, have yet to take hold? Campbell has been a politician for a very long time. Has he gotten sloppy? Is he tired?
Well, I think that those two things are true, but he has always been arrogant as hell, and he's a my way or the highway kind of a person. He doesn't consult with his, with his cabinet, much less his MLAs, and he goes merrily on his way. Now, by way of example, Joe, when I was in government, which is eons ago, and I was in the cabinet, Bill Bennett used to have an advisor within the cabinet. His name was Alec Fraser, and he came from Quesnel's, we used to call from Connell. And he was the sounding board. And any time we were all patting ourselves on the back and saying what great people we were and what a wonderful government we are, Bill Bennett would look down at Alec Fraser and he'd say, "Axel, what are they saying in downtown Quesnel about this?" And he'd sort of draw and say, "Well, Mr. Premier, they say it's a lot of shit." And we'd all sort of are taken aback and, "What? How can that be? These are wonderful things." Then we'd start to examine them from Main Street, British Columbia. And, you would find out where you were going. Well, Bennett was not too proud to do that. As a matter of fact, that was one of his great strengths. Campbell doesn't do that. Campbell, like Vanderzam, I might say, is a my way or the highway sort of person. And sooner or later, it gets you into deep trouble.
Is there any chance that this tax passes a referendum?
Well, it's hard to know that from this point and what the arguments will be and so on and so forth. I would be very surprised if it does. But what it also does, whether it passes or not, it puts it in issue a few months, 6 or 8 months before, maybe a little more than that, puts an issue about a year before the election. And it's carrying this on. See, this is what's happening with the HST, and this is what's happening with BC Rail and other things. They're not going away, and they're not going to go away until you get to the election. Now, the election itself creates other issues that people are going to want to be dealing with. But they have deep down in their gut the knowledge that their government lied through their teeth on the HST, and they know that the government has simply made horrendous mistakes and have lied again about BC Rail. And the one thing you can't lose in politics, Joe, is your credibility. Now, politicians don't have an overdose of credibility in the first place.
No.
And I think everybody knows that you put spin on things and you release the bad news on Friday afternoon and all that kind of stuff. And I think people kind of accept that. But when leaders are caught in a barefaced lie and they simply won't deal with that, as they have been both in BC Rail and especially in HST, that has a special place in the tummy of the voter. And that's a very bad start for a guy going into the polling booth, a bad start for the government.
A lot of the talk about alternatives to this BC Liberal government, to Gordon Campbell, doesn't come about regarding the NDP. It has to do with reviving the BC Conservative Party. Well, what has Carol James done wrong then?
Well, I don't know what she's done wrong. She hasn't done much of anything. And on dealing with Carol Taylor, Carol James you're talking about.
Yeah, the NDP.
Carol James. I don't know what she has been doing, except the policy, apparently, is for her to go around British Columbia to the smaller communities and give speeches to chambers of commerce and so on and let the Liberals do in their own juice. Now, whether or not that's a good tactic, I don't know. I come from the old pit bull politics. And I'm more than happy to see a leader, an opposition leader, jumps up and smacks people on the nose when they go wrong. And what was the other part of the question?
The BC Conservatives. That's the talk of.
This is utter madness, Joe. Utter madness. Yeah. This is a really. If the Liberals want to make sure that the NDP don't get in, this is exactly the wrong way to go. And the people that are in the Conservative Party are provincial Liberals up until now. Now, first of all, the vacuum is not on the right. There's no political vacuum there at all. Rather, the opposite. It's full of premiers and cabinet ministers. So that's not where the need is. Secondly, to start trotting out Vanderzam and Rita Johnston and these sort of people, and Brian Peckford, the former premier of Newfoundland,
right,
drag them out and start saying, here are your saviors. We're going to do it. It is absolute utter madness. But it certainly will hurt the government. The way I see it, in any event, is this is a glorious place for another social credit party to come back and occupy the populist middle, which Bill Bennett used to do. And but I don't see anything happening there. But the Conservatives, I think that the NDP must be just giggling away and having a couple of extra drinks to celebrate.
The Common Sense Canadian, you guys launched that in March, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Who's Damian Gillis?
Damian Gillis is a brilliant filmmaker. He has just won a huge award from the United States. He's, in a matter of a year or two, has become internationally known. He also happens to be a very bright guy, he'll hate hearing this, but I'll tell you anyway. He spent 1 year of his high school in Japan on a scholarship, and he learned fluent Japanese. Next year, he went to Thailand on the same thing and learned Thai. And so this guy is he's a brilliant individual in his own right, but he's one hell of a photographer. And I would invite people to go to the website, thecanadian.org. Remember, it's org, not the others.
Yeah.
And take a look at some of the stuff he's done. It's just great. And I kind of chuckled to him a little bit. We're going on a speaking tour starting in the middle of October. And I forget how many days and how many nights, but something like 25 speeches and 30 nights or something. And I say to him, who's exactly half my age, I say, Damon, it's a good thing I still have my youth. He's the same age as my oldest grandsons.
Yeah.
But he's a hell of a guy to work with, and he's going to become a big power. He already is a big power in the filmmaking industry.
So what do you guys do there, if you haven't been there? I have, but people listening perhaps haven't.
How do you mean by that, Joe?
Oh, what do you do at the Common Sense Canadian?
Oh, I see. Well, the whole raison d'etre is to bring to the people of British Columbia the truth about the energy program and what it's doing to the rivers of the province, fish farm issues, gravel issues, etc. And the reason I think it's so important is that the government has simply not told the truth if they've said anything at all about these issues. For example, in the gravel pit, they try to make the claim that that's to prevent flood control, or to be a part of flood control. We now know that they did it right to the fullest length. I think it lowers the river 4 or 5 centimeters. You know, it's absolutely preposterous. They've been denying the fish farms for years and years and years, and of course, what they're doing to the rivers. If people of British Columbia really saw what they're doing and understood what they were doing, I think they'd be horrified. And we are going out primarily, Joe, to bring these things to the attention of the public, that BC Hydro is being bankrupted by this, that our power that is being created by these private rivers isn't going to British Columbia, it's going south of the border. And the rivers are not just little mom-and-pop corporations, they're huge dams that they prefer to call weirs. And those are the kind of things you wouldn't think, Joe, that you'd have to go out and tell people that, because you would have thought there would have been a lot of debate over things like the energy policy and HST and that sort of thing. But there has not been. And the public, when they haven't been consulted, will find a way to be consulted. And I think we're going to provide at least some of that way.
And you're going throughout the province?
Yeah, actually mostly the southern part. The northern part we'll do next spring. There's a limit to how much you can do in a certain length of time, but we'll be going into the Kootenays and into Okanagan, into the Kamloops area and so on, and we'll also be doing Vancouver Island, where we've had a great response in the past.
Do you still do the search on TV?
I don't actually do it, no. We're running on old films. I think they're about 2 or 3 years old that I did. But it's been very exciting. And the station is still running them. I wish the hell I'd made a better contract deal with them. And it's getting a lot of coverage. I get a lot of mail out of that thing. So it was a lot of fun, and I'm hoping that the new owners will revive it. It's certainly on their plate, but I haven't heard yet.
I watched a bunch of them over the summer, mm-hmm. And they're just fascinating. I mean, to learn about, you know, other religions and the sort.
Let me just try to re-answer that. What that did is it morphed its way into a book for me. The only thing is I can't find a publisher, so I'm using this means to see if there is a publisher out there that wants to have a look at this program and how it worked, and also have a little fun, because I'm not a priest and I'm not heavily committed to any religion, but there we are. It was a lot of fun to do, and I hope we do some more of it.
Man, that would be just a great book. You know?
Well, I hope so, and if you know anybody that wants to publish it, I'm not even looking to make a lot of money out of it. Just in order to get it published, I'd be delighted to hear. They can get me easily at rafe@rafeonline.com.
Yeah. When we heard the news this past summer about these huge sockeye salmon stocks, I wanted to talk to you to find out what that means. Is that a good thing? Should we be optimistic, or should we be worried?
Well, I don't think we should be optimistic, because these things do happen. It's wonderful when they do, and a lot of people make money that haven't made them for a long time. But I want to tell you what this speaks to, Joe. This speaks to a total lack of scientific attention by the Department of Fisheries and Oceans. Now, there are some very, very fine scientists in there. I don't want anybody to think that I'm knocking them. What I'm knocking is the government. Now, the government of the day, the conservative government in the middle 1980s, politicized the DFO. They did it over the Command and Completion Project. And all the guys that really were prepared to speak out were eased out one way or another. Now, the consequence of that is that the DFO is neither peopled by the right sort of or enough scientists, nor is it given enough money to do proper research. Now, you've got to do a lot of research to understand these things because they don't happen by accident. And the DFO, the only thing that they've been able to do with this sockeye run is predict accurately that it was going to be a big run. Well, that's scarcely rocket science. What they didn't know is what kind of mortality rates come out of the river, what the fish farm impact is, what the at sea part is, whether 20 months at sea, what are the temperature of the water, so on. Now, it's always got to be an inexact science, but at least you have to do the science, and you have to make better predictions than, here come a thundering herd of horses when they're right in front of you. I mean, this sockeye run only became surprising when they came into the Fraser River. So it essentially means this, that the government of Canada, and incidentally, the salmon on the coast of British Columbia have been a political pain in the ass to the federal government since we came into Confederation. The government has got to restore the funding, and the DFO has got to restore the people, and the governor of Canada has got to give terms of reference which require them, without fear or favor, to investigate what's going on scientifically and to report it. Now, they're never going to be perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but they're a hell of a long way from perfect right now.
Well, is there anything on your radar screen with regards to federal politics?
You know, as I heard today, as you probably know, I do a little CBC gig every Monday morning.
Yeah.
Our conservative lady, Erin Cheddar, is a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
She's talking, people are talking about an election. Now, the election is not likely to be called by Mr. Harper, I wouldn't think. It's going to be called by the Liberals and the NDP, saying that they're going to vote him out of power. But in any event, it's, I laugh about this because I stand alone. I don't want, maybe you agree with me, maybe you don't. But people are saying, we've got to have a majority government. This parliament isn't doing anything. My rejoinder to that is then leave it where it is. You know, they make mischief when they can do things. If they're not doing anything, it means things are rolling along all right. Now, that's a little bit cynical, but let me make this point about minority governments and why I think that they are much, much better than majority governments. In a majority government, the Minister of Finance comes into the House and says, here is the amount of money you are going to give me, whether you like it or not, after we go through some formalities of dancing around the issue with the debates and so on. That's what you're going to pay, whether you like it or not. In a minority government, the Minister of Finance has got to go in and say, ladies and gentlemen, here is what I propose to be spent, and here's why I propose to be spent, and I hope that you will approve. And that's a hell of a lot different thing. And yes, I guess sometimes it is a little slower, but I think that that's not a bad thing. And if you look around the world, there are very, very few governments that are majority governments or operate under a system where a majority government is almost certain.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that this has worked, I think, the last few years here with minority governments in Ottawa. Are you following what's happening in Vancouver with this mayor?
No, I haven't, but I took a glance this morning at the paper. I know he's in China talking green, but I'm afraid I'm at a disadvantage. I cover a lot of sort of political things, but I'm so deeply involved in the whole question of saving our rivers that I tend to let some of that lapse, that Vancouver stuff.
Yeah.
And Lions Bay, you see, we tend to let Vancouver slide.
Yeah, yeah. Rafe, it's so good to talk to you again. You're good to do this, and I appreciate it.
Joe, it is always my pleasure, and I hope that you talk to me anytime you feel like it.
Will do. The websites are rafeonline.com and thecanadian.org, also weekly on the Taiz website and on CBC's The Early Edition on the Monday morning political panel. The writer, broadcaster, former Socrid cabinet minister, Rafe Mayer, on the line from Lions Bay in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunta.